For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Martin McCloskey on fire. This is Mark McCloskey on fire.
Not getting knocked down.
Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mark McCloskey, Mark McCloskey on fire. Well, you know, the major tenet of this program always is almost everything you hear from the mainstream media and the Uniparty is a lie designed to misdirect and weaken Western culture, weaken our nation, and weaken the traditional values that made us the greatest country on earth. One of the heroes was standing up for the truth in this country, particularly in relation to the COVID-19 lockdowns and the vaccination and the booster and all of the death and mayhem that has resulted, is Dr. Peter McCullough. And we're honored today to have him on the show. Welcome to the program, Doctor.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me. You're on fire, as always.
Well, you know, a lot of people that said they'd like to put me on fire. But, you know, I got to tell you, this is back in early 2020. I was out doing some campaigning in Odessa, Texas, and I ran into Dr. Richard Bartlett. And he was the first guy that talked to me about the kind of blowback people got for suggesting there might be pre-hospitalization treatment for COVID that would keep people from getting hospitalized, intubated, and ending up with a high mortality rate. And then I saw you testifying in front of a Senate subcommittee hearing, and I said, that's my kind of guy.
Well, it's true. You know, the big news is that sadly, COVID-19 was always treatable as an illness. Multi-drug protocols at home evolved over time. The only people who died were those who didn't receive adequate early treatment. And they ranged from simple nasal sprays and gargles to nutraceuticals and supplements, oral generic drugs. And we used some higher tech drugs that came along and monoclonal antibodies. But the point was to treat it early. Most people were told it couldn't be treated, and we had to wait for a vaccine, and the vaccines turned out, sadly, not to be safe or effective.
Yeah, and you know, I read an article that you wrote about permissive hypoxemia, and I had a really bad bout of COVID. I mean, I was on supplemental oxygen for months, and my O2 sats were very low, but I actually employed your program, your protocols, through my local COVID doctor, and had long COVID, but survived it and didn't get hospitalized. And I'm a 67-year-old gentleman, so I suspect that if they talked me into going to the hospital, they would have withheld supplemental oxygen until I had to be intubated, and then I'd end up dead.
It's true. You know, we've learned there's a study from Northwestern and even an autopsy study showing the people who died on the ventilator, they actually had ventilator-associated bacterial pneumonia.
Yeah,
a lot of them. And sadly, it wasn't appropriately treated. So we learned the best thing is to stay at home. Now, you defended your home, you and your wife, with your guns. And that's where you were when you got sick with COVID, right?
Well, you know, here's a funnier story. I was doing a program called Bard Fest, and I was a warm-up act for Mike Lindell. And people from all over the country, you know, thousands of people there. And I was doing the press interviews one after another, and then got on. I did 45 minutes, and then Mike was supposed to do 45 minutes. He went on for 2 hours. But by the end of that day, I had 104 temperature and just was sick as a dog. I was running for Senate at the time, so I couldn't take time off. And eventually, I just worked myself into, you know, the point where I was having a really, really hard time breathing. Had a chest plate done, and my lungs were just, it was opaque.
Oh, boy. Yeah, so you're in trouble. But, you know, we learned that we can support people through it. It does take about 4 to 6 drugs. I treated people in their 90s now and got them through the illness. No one really needed to be hospitalized. We could even temporize with IVs, nebulized treatments. All of that was, was appropriate. It should have been all hands on deck to save our seniors. I'm so heartbroken. People lost their lives with the illness. And the CDC has it at about 1.2 million people died. It was about 10% of adjudicated clearly COVID as the primary cause, and then 90% other significant contributors. But we shouldn't have had it, and we certainly shouldn't have people dying after the vaccine. Right now, the CDC has us at 18,655 vaccine deaths, and that's by doctors and nurses who report it. We've already determined the vaccine is a cause of death. And 1150 have occurred on the same day they take the shot. In the vaccine center, paramedics have come out and told us the vaccine is causing immediate death, about 1200 the next day. This is an absolute tragedy that this has gone on. And you probably heard AstraZeneca now worldwide pulled off the market after they faced some legal challenges in a UK court over blood clots.
Yeah. Well, you know, we'll get to this in just a second, but if we all sign off on the World Pandemic Agreement, you won't be able to sue the manufacturers anymore because they'll have worldwide immunity. But, you know, the thing that shocks me the most, and like I mentioned, I'm not a spring chicken, but if you had told me 10 years ago that the government would be involved in a conspiracy to lie to the people about a medication regimen which resulted in the death of a million people, and nobody would go to jail, nobody would be prosecuted, and nobody would be called on the carpet for it, I wouldn't believe it. But no one's going to jail. No one's getting any significant consequences for this, and people are still making money hand over fist.
It's true. The corruption is now wide open. WHO... trying to actually in a few weeks have a complete power grab, dominion over all plants, animals, and humans. Remember, the WHO pushed lockdowns, mandates, masking, and vaccines. They were on the wrong side of pandemic response. Now they want authority in our country.
Oh, yeah.
I can tell you, as a doctor, I don't want authority. Multiple states now are saying they will not have authority, like, say, within the state of Louisiana. We've had now all the GOP senators in the United States sign a letter to President Biden saying, don't sign on to this WHO treaty.
Yeah, which does not call itself a treaty. It calls itself an agreement, so that technically it doesn't have to be ratified by the Senate. But, you know, this is, and, you know, the course, you know, I always like to remind people that the World Health Organization is run by a guy named Tedros Ghebreyesus, who's a communist, who was the executive board member of the Tigray People's Liberation Front, which was a communist organization, a terrorist organization that took over Ethiopia. This is a guy who runs a World Health Organization who wants to create a worldwide power grab. And when they talk about pandemic-related things, in the definition section, by the way, before I get there, Doctor, I'm going to read something just to put my audience on where we're coming from. This is a little document from, I think, about 1949 that says, paragraph number one, section one, the voluntary consent of the human subject is absolutely essential. This means that the person involved should have legal capacity to give consent, should be so situated as to be able to exercise free power of choice without the intervention of any element of force, fraud, deceit, duress, overreaching, or other ulterior form or constraint or coercion. Do you recognize that, Doctor?
Yeah, I mean, to me, that sounds like the point one of the Nuremberg Code.
That's point one of the Nuremberg Code.
Yeah.
Do you think maybe our government has violated some of that, the COVID lockdowns and all
sure.
this lies?
Also, you know, the Declaration of Helsinki, which is free informed consent. This WHO situation, you can tell if all the GOP senators, states are opposing it, countries are opposing it, World Council for Health, a WHO alternative public health agency is completely opposing it. It's got to be stopped. You know, Jeremy Farrar, who was at the Wellcome Trust at the time, he's in the Fauci files. He helped Fauci and others try to cover up the lab as the origins of SARS-CoV-2. He's actually now the chief scientist at WHO.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, and you know, I was at a dinner, and the day that our biggest health care provider here in Missouri, the Barnes Jewish Christian BJC Healthcare, said that any physician in their system who prescribed ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine would have their privileges removed, right? And I looked at the guy sitting next to me. I said, "This is just a government ordered death," and you know. It's just amazing. But we are going to give, in the end of May, assuming the president signs off on this, President Biden, I still like using that term, we will have ceded our sovereignty to a worldwide, unelected, leftist organization. And when you read through it, I mean, here's our definition of pandemic-related products. Anything which they claim is a pandemic-related product, it gives them absolute control over the use of it, the manufacture of it, the distribution of it, and the withholding of it. Pandemic-related products means products that are needed for pandemic prevention, preparedness, and response, which may include, without limitation, meaning everything, right? Diagnostics, therapeutics, vaccines, and personal protective equipment. And if you read on, it says they've got they can assess populations to decide where they can be best deployed to do whatever they need to do. And they talk about pre, post, and inter-pandemic time periods, meaning all times, everywhere, for everything.
It would be a disaster if the United States signs off on it. You know, they have junior staffers going to represent us from the Department of State, UNAID, and HHS. I mean, you're probably the most notable is going to be Atul Gawande, who's now just basically a physician administrative staffer at UNAID. These people are not accountable. They haven't made any statements about their interpretation of this. They're not even following their own rules. They're supposed to have, you know, about 3 months to review sets of documents. They just floated some out, you know, a couple of weeks ago. You know, let's keep a careful eye on this. I'm glad you're on top of it. So many other breaking news. We just have a minute or two left. You know what's going to else come out, Mark? In the next couple of weeks is going to be the Supreme Court decision on Missouri versus Biden.
Yeah.
What do you think? What do you think is going to happen?
You know, I think the Supreme Court's going to come down on the side of Missouri on that one. I mean, our Attorney General, our former Attorney General, now Senator Eric Schmidt, and our current Attorney General, Andrew Bailey, I think they're going to crack that wide open. I think the Supreme Court's going to is going to make the right decision. You know, it's just I am shocked and amazed, though, at how much of our world is controlled by powers that are unelected, unaccountable, and represent so much money that it's just impossible to defeat them, seemingly.
Well, I'm glad to hear your optimism. I've heard other analyses based on what Sotomayor stated and Ketanji Brown and others that, you know, that there was a strong vein of paternalism in their comments that, you know, the government is kind of big brother, the government, particularly with respect to doctors. Oh, let's not have any doctors go out there and, you know, present any research finding or analyses. So I don't know. I hope you're right, but I think we should be prepared for a dark day. If they side in favor of Biden, that means it's game on for censorship in social media, almost certainly continued censorship in mainstream media. It also means it's game on for McCloskey on Fire and independent media.
All right. Well, let's do two things before you go. I'll let you put in a comment about the wellness company and about your book.
Great. The wellness company, TWC.health, is the place to go for healthcare nationally. More about that later. I'm going to have to jump on this other call, Mark. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for being on the program, Doctor. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's Dr. Peter McCullough. You could hear his other call, his other program coming in at the end of ours. But it's great to have him on the program. He's a real champion. He's a guy who put his entire medical career on the line for telling the truth. I mean, there's, as we say every day here, there's no unforgivable crime in America except for standing up against the left, and he stood up, and he's still paying for it. And, you know, they tried to make a pariah out of him, and instead they made a hero out of him. And so you gotta write your congressman, you gotta write your senator, you gotta protest against the adoption of this WHO World Pandemic Agreement. It will destroy the freedom of the entire world. It is the takeover of the single world socialist government in the guise of a health treaty. Well, you can also go to Dr. McCullough's website. It's petermcculloughmd.com. He's got a book out called The Courage to Face COVID-19, and he takes on the pharmaceutical complex. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is as close to the end of America as you can possibly imagine. They always like to slip things in sideways. They know they could never get elected. They know they could never get past a world socialist government if they were honest about it and left it up to the people. But they can slide it in sideways saying, we're doing this for your health. We'll read that treaty. It gives this unelected international organization the power and the express purpose of the redistribution of wealth, assets, and human capital to developing nations, assessing what each country has, and then distributing it around the world at their discretion for all time, for all things. And ladies and gentlemen, we cannot allow that to happen. And we'll be right back in just a minute.
Fighting against the New World Order. More Mark McCloskey on Fire coming up. For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on NewstalkSTL.com. Mark McCloskey on Fire. You're listening to Mark McCloskey on Fire.
Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Mark McCloskey on Fire. You know, we've been having a dispute here in the state of Missouri about who are Republicans and who are not. Missouri is one of those, you know, deep red states, we're told. We have super majorities in the House of Representatives, super majorities in the Missouri Senate, and we've got a Missouri governor that's a Republican, and yet we don't tend to do big red things. In fact, we tend to do big blue things. Missouri has this thing called a balanced budget amendment, where allegedly we're supposed to have a balanced budget. We do not run deficits in Missouri. We always have to have more money than we need to operate the government. And you'll go around the state and all these politicians will brag about how we have a balanced budget. Well, the only reason we have a balanced budget in the state of Missouri is that 50% of all of the Missouri budget comes from the federal government. More than that, despite the fact that we've had super majorities in both houses of Congress and a Republican governor, we spend more money every year. We accumulate more expenditures every year at a prodigious rate to where the amount of spending in the state of Missouri is just out of hand. It's just absolutely ridiculous. And what's the reason? The reason is that in our state capital, Jefferson City, inside that nice marble Capitol building, it's a rhino fest. I mean, it is a rhino parade. Everybody's, like, most of people, I shouldn't say everybody, almost everybody that's got an R behind their name votes for big government, big spending, and reductions in individual liberty. We have only a handful of members of the Missouri Senate that are true constitutional conservatives with an eye towards preserving our republic, and they're outnumbered on every side. Every possible proposal to damage our economy, to damage our freedoms, get voted in by a majority of the Republican senators and majority of the Republican members of the House of Representatives. So we call those people rhinos, right? Republicans in name only. But, you know, when I was running for U.S. Senate, we went to all 114 counties in the state of Missouri. There's 114 counties plus the city of St. Louis, where I have a nice abode, and unfortunately have to be in the city of St. Louis. But every time we'd go from county courthouse to county courthouse, the local party chairs would always say, "This used to be a Democrat county, right? We used to have a Democrat county clerk and a Democrat circuit clerk. And, you know, our member of the Missouri House was a Democrat and our senator was a Democrat. But now we've got Republicans in every office in the court building, every office in the county courthouse. And we have a Republican state representative and a Republican state senator. And aren't we proud of ourselves for being all Republicans now?" I'd look at them and say, "No, you don't." These are people that only have an R behind their name because if they still had a D behind their name, they wouldn't get elected. And they're the same people they were when they had a D behind their name. So a young lady out in Vernon County, Missouri, which is out in the western end of Missouri near Kansas, city of Nevada, Missouri, the chairman of the Vernon County Republican Committee and some other folks, her name is Cynthia Hager, and then some other folks like Don Carricker in Christian County, Missouri, and other folks came up with this idea. Why don't we require Republicans to actually be Republicans? Why don't we require people that wish to run on a Republican ticket to actually adhere to Republican principles and Republican values? Bizarre concept, right? To actually make people that claim to be Republicans. So they started a process that they call the vetting process. One of the simplest things that they wanted candidates who wanted to be a Republican, one of the simplest things they required them to do was to verify that they would follow the Republican Party platform, okay? How hard would that be to admit that if you're going to run as a Republican, you ought to adhere to the Republican Party platform? Well, the state party rejected that idea. The chairman of the state party, a guy named Nick Myers, sat down for a couple hours with Cynthia Haggard, and she kept trying to get him to admit what minimum requirements people would need to meet to run as Republicans. And finally, she gets down to, well, can we at least agree that they ought to apply the principles of the Republican Party platform? He wouldn't even agree to that. All right. And so the party rejected the concept on a state level. But on a county-by-county basis, various counties started to adopt the vetting program. And in addition to verifying that you'll support the party platform, there was a 25-question values survey drawn up by a guy with a PhD in surveying, which would then be scored unbiasedly, objectively, by a computer to determine whether or not your answers to those questions made you in compliance with mainstream Republican political philosophy and ideals. It's multiple choice questions. The answers are drawn from the platforms from the Republican Party and the Democrat Party various other political organizations. And like I say, scored objectively. Well, in some counties in Missouri, like Vernon County and like my home county of Franklin County and in Christian County, and various other counties, vetting became mandatory, which meant that the party, local party committee, informed anybody who wanted to run as a Republican that if they chose to run as a Republican, they had to submit to the vetting process. And if they refused to submit to the vetting process, they would not be allowed to run as Republicans. Or if they decided to get vetted, go through the process, and then failed, they would not be allowed to run as Republicans. And it's not a very high bar. I mean, if you we are trying to keep the test private so that people can't learn the test. But I think you only need a C, 75, to pass the test. And if you have anything like genuine Republican philosophies, you're going to pass that test. In Missouri right now, we've got an open governor's election. The governor, Mike Parson, isn't running for re-election. And so there are three folks running for governor in the state of Missouri. There is our current Secretary of State, Jay Ashcroft, whose dad used to be the governor here and then the senator and then the Attorney General of the United States. We've got Bill Eigel, who's a Missouri state senator who's terming out, who's a real strong constitutional conservative. And then we've got the current Lieutenant Governor, Mike Kehoe. Well, out of those three folks, Jay Ashcroft, and Bill Eigel have vetted, okay? People running for attorney general vetted. In the counties where vetting is mandatory, of course, all the people who were going to run as Republicans have vetted, with the exception of Vernon County, where all this started. In Vernon County, there were a number of people that wanted to run as Republicans, at least four of whom were incumbent already as Republicans, that refused to be vetted. What could be the only possible reason that you refuse to be vetted? And that is that if you do get vetted, you won't pass because you're not really a Republican, right? Well, out in Vernon County, a total of eight people who wanted to run for various county offices refused to vet. And so the Vernon County Central Republican Central Committee sent notices to those individuals and to the county clerk saying that if those people attempted to file as Republicans, their filing would be rejected by the Republican Party. And I don't want to get too technical in this, but there's a statute that controls this. It's Missouri Statute 115.357. My wife is putting her hands up saying, you're getting too technical here. But basically what it says is that you can't have your declaration of candidacy filed with a county clerk until you've paid your filing fee to the treasurer of the county party. It also says that no one's name can be printed on any official ballot until their filing fee has been paid to the treasurer of the local county party. All right. These eight people refused to be vetted, refused to go through the process. They went directly to the clerk's office, submitted their filing fees to the clerk at the same time that they submitted their declaration of candidacy, which is, by the way, a violation of the statute, because the statute clearly says that before you file your declaration of candidacy, you have to pay your fee to the treasurer of the county committee. Well, so these eight people didn't do it. So the clerks took the position that they can accept the fee on behalf of the candidate, and that's good enough. In fact, the Association of County Clerks sent around correspondence saying the clerks had that power. In fact, the Missouri State Republican Party sent around an opinion letter to everybody by their lawyer saying that the Vernon County Party, the vetting entities were wrong, that the law didn't permit that, and that the county clerks could go ahead and take their fees. And by the way, this legal stuff that this McCloskey guy was talking about was all just BS, and you could ignore it because his interpretation of law was wrong. Well, a couple of interesting things happened, okay? Number one, there was a guy who submitted his declaration of candidacy to run for governor and submitted his fee, paid his fee to the treasurer of the Missouri State Party pursuant to the statute, and they accepted his candidacy. And then a little bit later, they find out that maybe they don't like this guy because maybe he'd been associated with this little thing called the Ku Klux Klan, and we didn't want him as a Republican, says the Missouri State Republican Party. And they filed a lawsuit against the Secretary of State and this gentleman, whose name is Darryl McClanahan, saying that, oops, you know, we were really busy on filing day, and a lot of people were filing, and the dog ate our homework, and we don't have any way of vetting candidates. We don't have any effective way of vetting candidates. This is the Missouri State Party, the same people that told us we shouldn't be vetting. And by the way, even though we accepted his filing fee, we now think he shouldn't be allowed to run for governor as a Republican. Well, that's what we've been saying all along, is that this guy would not have passed the vetting process. But so now we bring forward about a month later, and now the filing deadline's over, and the clerk in Vernon County, Missouri, a young lady named Adrienne Lee, decides that she's going to place these eight people on the ballot despite the fact that their fees had been rejected by the county party treasurer and that she'd been given notice both before and after that the party wasn't going to let them run as Republicans. She refused to back down. She refused to agree that she had no power to take their names off the ballot if they're on the ballot, no power to we could not be prevented from printing their names on the official ballot. So we filed a lawsuit. I filed the lawsuit on behalf of the Vernon County Republican Central Committee. Filed something called a writ of mandamus, petition for writ of mandamus, asking the court to make it a mandate that the clerk could not put these people, these eight people that would not vet, could not put their names on the ballot. The judge issued a preliminary writ of mandamus. Ordering the clerk to not place these names on the ballot until further hearing, giving the clerk time to file responsive pleadings. Well, the clerk hires a lawyer at county expense, and now a large county expense, to fight it. Well, and then between the time of the issuing of the preliminary rule in mandamus and the time that it's going to be heard, which was a day before yesterday, they file for a writ of prohibition in the Court of Appeals, all this legal maneuvering. Well, then we have a hearing. We have a trial on the merits in front of a judge on Tuesday of this week, and she grants a permanent writ of mandamus saying that the county clerk exceeded her constitutional authority, exceeded her statutory authority, exceeded her ministerial duties in accepting the candidacy of these folks that had been rejected by the Republican Party. Well, the question comes down to who gets to choose who's in your party. Well, in my humble opinion, only Republicans get to choose who are Republicans. And here's Justice Antonin Scalia in California Democratic Party versus Jones, opinion of the United States Supreme Court. And I'll read it as follows. The formation of national political parties was almost concurrent with the formation of the republic itself. Consistent with this tradition, the court has recognized that the First Amendment protects the freedom to join together in furtherance of common political beliefs. which necessarily presupposes the freedom to identify the people who constitute the association and to limit the association to those people only. The freedom of association would prove an empty guarantee if associations could not limit control over their decisions to those who share the interests and persuasions that underlie the association's being. Well, ladies and gentlemen, why have a political party? Why have something called the Republican Party unless it stands for something? And if it doesn't stand for something, it stands for nothing. And in the state of Missouri right now, as in the United States Congress and the United States Senate, being a Republican stands for nothing because the majority of them are rhinos, Republicans in name only. And this vetting process is a way for us to take control again of the Republican Party, make sure that people that run with that R behind their name stand for individual liberty, limited government, and individual rights, states' rights, and keeping the government off our back. And if people aren't willing to adhere to those principles, then by God, they should not be permitted to lie to the people and run as Republicans. Well, we'll be right back, and I'll do my roundup of the week. But the good news is we won twice in the state court, and now let's see if that clerk appeals it to the Western District Court of Appeals.
Fighting against totalitarianism, this is Mark McCloskey on Fire. More Mark McCloskey on Fire coming up. For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on NewstalkSTL.com. Mark McCloskey on Fire. This is Mark McCloskey on Fire.
There is superstitious writings on the wall.
Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Mark McCloskey on Fire. Now, my wife tells me I wasn't simple enough in the last session to make folks understand what we're about here. I'll make it real simple. Only Republicans have a right to say who are Republicans. If people want to put an R behind their name, by God, they ought to represent Republican values. And if not, they ought to run as Democrats or Independents or Green Party or I don't care what, Communist Workers Party, which we don't have in Missouri anymore, thank God, but not as Republicans. And only fellow Republicans have the right to make that decision. Not the county clerk's office, not the government, just the Republican Party. Is that clear enough now, Patty? Patty says that's now clear enough. Okay, so I'll move on. Now I'll give you my gripe du jour. I'd like to form a national organization that says that if you pick up the phone to call customer service regarding anything, and you get somebody from overseas, somebody from Bangalore, India, or someplace in China that is speaking pidgin English to you, you should hang up immediately and refuse to ever buy a product from that company again. Because I don't care who it is. If you're complaining about your AT&T service or you're complaining about a washing machine you bought at Lowe's, you're going to get somebody on the other side of the planet who's going to use lots of words. Oh, thank you for talking to me, Mr. Mark. I'm going to be very clear about this because I know you want to talk about this. And we're going to look into this. And we're going to take all the pleading and we're going to take all the papers. And I'm going to make sure that I've got everything exactly right, Mr. Mark, because I know that you're interested in me making sure that we have everything exactly right. And so, Mr. Mark, we're going to look at all these pieces of paper. And I want you to do the appropriate documentation, Mr. Mark, so we can make sure that you're just talking nonsense in circles and circles and circles and circles. And you end up being on the phone for hours and getting not a goddamn thing accomplished. Pardon my language. So, we buy an LG washing machine for my country property, for the quarters of the guy that runs my farm out there so that he can wash his clothes. What an interesting thing to do with a washing machine, right, is wash your clothes. Well, it breaks almost immediately, right? And so I call up Lowe's and I say, I'd like to have a new washing machine, please. This one just broke. No, you have to, if you didn't buy a Lowe's warranty, you have to go through the manufacturer. So we call up the number for the manufacturer. Oh, Mr. Mark, not to tell you, we become the home. We are not down. Yeah. Okay. For an hour, right? And then finally, we reach an understanding that they can't replace the machine. We have to try to repair it. So they don't actually have somebody that can repair machines in this part of the world because, by the way, this is a global enterprise, and they can't actually have somebody in the location where you are. So they contract through Sears. Sears sends a repairman out, but before they send a repairman out, they guess over the phone what parts you may need to fix your washing machine that's not working. Oh, first of all, they make you do it yourself help. They give you this protocol. You got to unplug this. You got to hold these two buttons down to clear the system. Then you got to unhook these things, hook these things back up, and then turn the machine back on and then see if it works. And then if it doesn't work, then call them back. Then they're going to guess what parts you need, order them, have them sent in the mail to you, so that they'll be there when their technician comes out. And lo and behold, the technician comes out and replaces a bunch of stuff, right? And they send you a bill that shows you how much it cost LG to have them come out and fix your machine, including the cost of the parts and the cost of the service. And what was the first one? It was about $400 or something. $600 washing machine, right? First time they come out, they spend $400 working on it. It works for a few days. Same problem, right? So then you schedule for the next time out. Now, mind you, the washing machine's not working. What it won't do is fill with water. So imagine this. For all this period of time, my guy has got the garden hose running into his washing machine to fill it up so he can wash his gosh darn clothes, right? And then when they come out, they fix it. It breaks. He sticks the hose back in and waits for them to reschedule the next time. So they come out, end of April, fix the machine the next time, right? Replace the motherboard. Now, you know, I'm only 67 years old, but, you know, we had a washing machine when I was a kid before there were computers. Somehow washing machines seemed to get clothes nice and clean, even without having things called motherboards in them. They, like, had a switch, you turned them on, they ran for a while, then they turned off, and they spun around and semi-dried your stuff. Then you put them in a dryer, which also didn't have a computer in it, which turned it around with hot air until it was dry. And they lasted forever, right? You know, you had the same one. Your grandparents could have bought it, right? And it was still working. Now they have computers in them. Second time the guy comes out, replaces the motherboard. And then he replaces some other parts. And I say to the guy out there, I said, run this thing, you know, a few times a day. See how long it's going to work. 2 days, breaks again. All right. So then now he's back there filling his laundry, filling his washing machine with his hose. And we call up LG again. Now this machine's broken twice. Half the time we've owned it, my poor son of a gun's had to be using a garden hose to fill his washing machine. And so I have, day before yesterday, I have an hour and a half long conversation with this guy in some third world country talking about the same thing over and over and over again. Can you send me the part number for the part that we replaced last time? And can you send me order number? Can you send me service order number? And can you send me? So I'm taking pictures of all the paperwork. We've got all the paperwork. We're pretty meticulous about this stuff because you know how they want to screw with you, right? And so I send him all this stuff, and he says, I don't see the part number. Can you give me part number on the part we sent you? So I read them to him, right? I finally find what he wants. I read him the numbers, and he says, well, that's right. We had those. I'm just confirming it. So, I mean, all the time that you had me read all this stuff to you, you're just dicking with me, right? Because you already had all the information. You had to have all the information, or you wouldn't have sent the guy out there in the first place. So then, after an hour and more conversation with this guy, he finally gets around. He's saying, I got to document qualifications for. I got to document qualifications. I got to confirm the documentation for the qualification for the refund. Blah, blah, blah. And he goes on and on and on and on and on. I say, I don't want to hear all this crap. Pardon my language. I just want a new washing machine. Yes or no? I don't want to hear about qualifications. I want to hear about documentation. Yes or no? Are you going to give me a new washing machine? Well, I got a document. I got to qualify. You just told me you did that, okay? Does it qualify? Now that you're documented, all that, does it qualify? Yeah, it qualifies. I'll send you over to a refund department, okay? Phone goes dead for 20 minutes. Then he comes back on, and he says, oh, they're going to call you back, okay? Fine. Next day, phone rings. Different guy, different foreign accent, different third world part of the world, now telling me that by their internal protocol, you have to have the machine repaired 3 times and fail 3 times before they'll give you a refund, right? Our 1-year anniversary of purchasing this device runs on 5/22, right? We bought it on May 22nd, last year, 2023. And by the way, the very last question that the first guy 2 days ago, when we get done with the hour conversation about certifying qualification, documentation of certified qualification, he says, wondering what did you buy this machine? I said, per your request, I've texted you a picture of the invoice for it when you asked me to, and you've got it right in front of you. And when you ask me what date I bought this, this is just more evidence that you're intentionally screwing with me because you could not honestly ask that question at this point. Anyway, so next day, guy calls up and he says, we don't qualify for a refund because it's got to fail and be repaired 3 times with failure before you get a refund. What do you bet it might just be to drag us out until after the 22nd of May, 2024, when the 1-year warranty runs out? And what are they going to do? Let's say the guy comes back out, the guy fixes it, it fails again, and it's still not yet 5/22. Do you think they're going to give me a new washing machine? No, they're not going to give me a new washing machine. They might give me a refund. Does that make me whole? No. Because they'll give me a refund for the purchase price of the machine. They'll probably discount it for the time that we had it, right? If it's got a life expectancy of 5 years, they'll subtract 20% of the value for the year that we had it, even though it didn't work most of the time. But they won't pay me back for the sales tax or the delivery charge or the haul-away charge for the old device. So here we spend half a year with my poor son of a gun having to fill his washing machine with a hose and only to have me spend hours, now literally 4 different occasions, hours on the telephone with these pidgin English people from the other side of the planet giving me a tale of woe and BS. Here's the answer, ladies and gentlemen. Absolutely stinking refuse to do business with any company that has offshore customer service. In fact, you should probably don't do business with anybody who manufactures offshore, because those jobs used to be here in the United States. And definitely don't put up with a BS of some pidgin English person using language error as an excuse for not being straight with you. Forgive you. And I tell you, pick them at random. You call up these customer service people, and they're all pre-programmed to give you lots and lots and lots of words and no information and not take any specific position on any of this. Well, my dearest dad grew up in Newton, Iowa. His dad was a steam fitter for the Maytag company. They made washers and dryers and other appliances. Steam fitter, nice manual labor job, good union job in those days. Guess what? There ain't no more Maytag in Newton, Iowa. Maytag's made it in Mexico now, right? And, you know, if we just pulled together as a people and refused to do business with these international mega corporations, required your companies to be located in the United States, to have American workers, to have American-made products, first of all, it'd be good for the economy. Second of all, you'd get somebody that speaks English when you call up to complain about it. Thirdly, we'd have a great source of jobs again in this country, of jobs for people that don't need to go to college, don't need to spend all those student loan dollars to be forgiven by our leftist government. Get out there, get a good paying job, make a living for yourself and your spouse, and by the way, do something productive with your hands other than the punch buttons on your cell phone. So that's my gripe about internationalism. And I'll tell you what, this international, this global WHO pandemic treaty would absolutely eliminate any sovereignty in this country. My favorite line is this. It says, this is page 20 of the agreement. Each party, meaning each nation state belonging to this organization, signing off on it, each party shall develop, in accordance with national context, comprehensive national pandemic prevention, preparedness, and response plans that address pre, post, and inter-pandemic periods. Pre, post, and inter-pandemic. That means all time, right? Before it happens, after it happens, and during when it's happening, all those things, you cede all your control to the WHO. Subparagraph A, identify and prioritize as appropriate populations based on public health risk and need for access to pandemic-related products and health services. In other words, they get to decide whether we get to have our own medicine or if they want to take our drugs and give them to some third-world nation, because all of these things are designed to specifically benefit, especially in developing countries. But here's the thing. Support the timely and scalable mobilization of the multidisciplinary surge capacity of human and financial resources. This treaty, this agreement, would put human beings in the same category as vaccines and dollar bills. Human and financial resources to be marshaled around the world as the WHO deems fit. Ladies and gentlemen, this document, I've said it several times today, but it really represents the takeover of the world. It really represents that one world socialist government. And I can't tell you how insane it is that this country would even consider signing off on a treaty generated by an entity, the World Health Organization, run by a communist terrorist by the name of Tedros Ghebreyesus, whose Tigray People's Liberation Front is a terrorist organization. Oh, we've taken it off our terrorist list now, so they're okay. Terrorist communist organization, which staged a coup in Ethiopia and ruled by brutal force for years. And ladies and gentlemen, what possible reason would there be for us to sign on to such a document? One of the things that this document includes is a way to share pandemic viruses. They call it the WHO Pathogen Access and Benefit Sharing Program, which creates an organization to share the knowledge regarding pathogens with pandemic potential. In other words, when you develop something super bad like COVID, distribute it to the whole world. Isn't that a good idea? Well, that's all my time, ladies and gentlemen. Just say no.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.